Our next case is Toll versus the Commissioner of Public Safety. We will take a minute while the panel is reconstituted. Thanks, Katie. Could you find us?
I think that's running right on time.
Our next case this morning is Toll versus the Commissioner of Public Safety. As you're getting settled, I'll just remind everyone that the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, the respondent will have 15 minutes for their arguments, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, counsel for the appellant, if you could just approach the microphone, adjust the height of the podium to your level. It does go up and down. And please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Andrew Whipper, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Joan Toll. I'm here to ask the court today to reverse the findings of the Aiken County District Court on an execution of a search warrant, which was authorized to seize the person of Joan Toll from her home on February 9th of 2019. During that district court hearing on the implied consent, it was challenged by Ms. Toll's attorney at the time that the issuance of the warrant was not proper, that it should have been an arrest warrant rather than a search warrant, and further that it was not supported by probable cause, and that the warrant, even if it was deemed the appropriate tool, contained material misrepresentations or omissions that rendered the warrant invalid. So based on that finding from the court, which upheld the warrant, as well as making a finding that it was the appropriate tool, Ms. Toll appeals from that verdict. And then I can briefly go over a factual basis as to how we got here.
Mr. Whipper, I don't know that we need that, at least in any great detail, except in response perhaps to questions, but my first question for you is, when you look at the briefing and look at the underlying record, it's a DUI case, and then the judge's order references obstructing legal process as the basis for a valid arrest. My question for you, at what point, and does it show on the record during the omnibus hearing, did either factually or both factually and legally was it presented to the court this was an arrest for obstructing legal process?
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, just to be clear, it was an implied consent hearing, so it wasn't a full omnibus hearing.
Thank you.
I don't believe that existed in the record. Basically, the factual basis that was established by the officers was that Ms. Toll refused to open the door when they came to the house. As far as I'm concerned, nothing was presented except for that last line in the order indicating that she was obstructing legal process, and that's what she was being arrested for. She got arrested for a second-degree DWI, and that's what was contested in the underlying implied consent hearing.
So the commissioner did not raise that issue either in the presentation of the evidence or testimony of the officers who made the arrest, or by a legal argument in closing?
That's correct, Your Honor. The issues were narrowed at the time of the hearing to basically take care of the search warrant and the grounds around the search warrant.
So do you believe... legally, that was correct in any event. Now looking back at the record and looking at the arrest, that indeed she was properly arrested for obstructing legal process.
I do not, Your Honor.
And why
is that? I don't agree with that. I think at the base level, what my client was exerting was her right to not come out of her home and basically provide evidence against herself. The problem I have with what happened on that night is that there's, and with the search warrant, was there's no nexus between the intoxication. At one point or another, she admits that she drove her car into the ditch. We agree on that. At one point, she admits that she drank alcohol, but there's no underlying nexus between the driving conduct and the alcohol consumption. Nobody asked the questions of when that took place. And in fact, she was found when she was arrested after the search warrant was executed to be drinking an alcoholic beverages. So
about the fact that she left the car and immediately went home and they traced her footprints? I mean, is it so unreasonable to assume that someone who's been drinking and driving, you know, gets into a car issue, runs away? I mean, doesn't that happen a lot?
It can, certainly, Your Honor. I believe Ms. Toll was also revoked at the time.
Okay.
So, and we don't have any
information.
Is that
even more reason to run away?
Well, it certainly could be. And her home was between 7 and 10 miles from where her truck went in the ditch. And this was, if you remember last February, it was one of the worst winters we've had in northern Minnesota. So it was cold. She probably wanted to get out of there at any means. I'm not sure what her basis was. I don't think the record's clear on that. She didn't testify at the hearing as to why she left the scene. But certainly the record's not clear as to when. We have no indication of when she left the scene, when she was driving. The 911 call does not give any clear indication as to when the conduct even was. The person who ended up calling in never even saw the car. He got a phone call, or so he says, from a friend of his that said there was a truck in the ditch on County Road 3 out in the middle of nowhere in Aiken County, and that he thinks he knows whose truck it is, and that if it's Joan Toll's truck, 9 times out of 10, she's intoxicated. So he doesn't even have a basis of knowledge as to when any kind of driving conduct took place. He never saw her that day. He never had any indication that she was in a bar drinking alcohol. So the basic basis of the entire call comes into question when we start looking at what the actual factual basis was that dispatch took in, which is part of what my brief entails, is talking about who knew what and when and how, because the search warrant seems on its face to be pretty clear that this is the information we had. It was Joan Toll put her truck in the ditch on this day at around 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and that she had been intoxicated.
Would you, Mr. Whipple, does your client agree, and this kind of follows up Judge Connolly's question, that at least there was a articulable suspicion of driving while impaired, such that the officers had a reasonable basis to wish to inquire further of her, which is why they were at her home?
I don't agree with that. We don't agree with that basic fact, because she was never seen around the car, around the driving at all. Nobody ever saw her during that time period. They only saw her after, and we can't place any time limits on when that was. That's the problem I have, and the problem that appellant has, is no one can say when she was actually around the vehicle, and no one can say how long she'd been at home drinking alcoholic beverages. So we don't agree with that basic premise at all.
Counsel, the district court specifically credited the deputy who had undergone specialized training, including identification of driving conduct associated with alcohol impairment. And we had the officer who said, typically when we see cars in the ditch, it's equipment failure, it's some kind of negligence or impairment. And so, again, to suggest that the office, you're suggesting the officer should have done nothing and not followed up at all?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all, Your Honor. What I'm suggesting is the officer did lay out about 4 or 5 different scenarios of what happens when they come upon a single vehicle accident in Aiken County. What I'm saying is there's no connection between what was called in and what actually happened. Nobody knows what happened.
Well, that's why the officer investigated.
Correct. And I believe he should have asked the questions, because like he stated in his testimony, there could have been some sort of medical issue or she needed tending to. I don't disagree that he should have investigated further. I disagree that he had probable cause to believe that she committed the crime of DWI at the time.
What about when he went to her home and found her, as he testified, with slurred speech?
Given the fact that he had no idea how long she had been there, I don't agree that he had the requisite probable cause at that point either. There, at no time can they connect her driving conduct whenever
Did he have the basis to seek a search warrant?
I don't believe so. The only thing that they had at the time when they were talking to her at her front door was that she admitted driving and that she admitted that she was revoked.
And she admitted drinking.
She did admit drinking later on in that conversation, yes.
She didn't say when, did she?
Nobody said when.
Okay. Mr. Whipple, you used the phrase probable cause a couple of times, and it's an interesting, unique fact pattern because you need probable cause for a search warrant, but isn't it true that the reason and the court so found here the record is clear that Deputy Novotny applied for the search warrant with an intention to seize and then put italics petitioner not to arrest her? And so that brings us back to a DUI seizure, not an arrest. The standard typical situation, do you have a basis to have someone step out of the vehicle because we got this report, we see the car in the ditch, and now they're with it. The only difference here, of course, and you believe it's a significant difference, but isn't it true that the officers needed only articulable suspicion of driving while impaired to seize her and investigate further?
Yeah, basically we're talking about an expansion of the stop is what you're referring to.
But because, as I understand it here, because she refused to let them to enter the house after she admitted she had been drinking and drove the car in, they wanted to further investigate that. That's why they had to get a search warrant in order to enter the house to finish the DUI seizure. Would that be an accurate description of what the court found was in the record and what was happening?
I think that's an accurate description of what happened. I don't think it's legally sound.
Then let me bring you back then. I understand that point. It was at the point, I understand it, when they came back with a search warrant that she was able, and the record apparently demonstrates this, to see the search warrant, and they wanted to come in. And she apparently said nothing, ignored them, and sat down.
That's accurate.
Okay.
As per the record, that's accurate.
And so is it your understanding that's the point at which the judge felt there was a obstructing legal process?
That could have been the point, Your Honor, yes. It's not clear in the record that's the point. I disagree with calling what that was a seizure.
Well, if you look just at to the, clarify, I was just reading what the court found the purpose of the search warrant. I don't think it's undisputed she was actually arrested when they entered. She was arrested and not seized. She was arrested and brought to the jail.
And I disagree with the court's finding on that.
On which part?
That they sought a warrant to seize her temporarily. That's the whole point at the end of this interaction that gets us to the point where the only reason they went in the house was to arrest her. They immediately arrested her and brought her to the jail. That's what happened. We can't ignore what happened after the fact. The court found that the deputies needed to do that in order to effectuate their arrest or seizure.
When you disagree with that, what you're meaning is you don't believe there was a legal basis either to seize for DUI. In other words, if she had invited them in, your point being is they had no basis to ask to go in for driving while impaired investigation.
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor. And it all revolves around the nexus of the driving conduct versus when the alcohol was consumed. The record is clear that the caller never saw her. The deputies never saw her. We don't have any timeline of when she drank versus when she drove versus when she got into an accident and when they saw her. For all we know, she could have been at home for 6 hours drinking all day. We don't have any information.
We do know, though, the call was, they were at the scene within, was it 15 or 20 minutes of the phone call?
It was about 15 to 20 minutes from the phone call, but the caller didn't have any basis of knowledge as to when an accident occurred. The caller had third-party information. His friend called him and said he saw a car in the ditch. He never stated that he saw Joan Toll at the car in the ditch. He never saw her driving. There's just no basis of knowledge. She could have put that car in the ditch a day ago. For all the records clear, we don't know that. And that's what my problem is with how they get to the point where we're requesting a search warrant, is that they just didn't have the information. There was no information to indicate that she drank alcohol, then drove her car, and was impaired at the time of the driving conduct that landed her in the ditch. We just don't know when that is. And that's the whole basis for our appeal. If there's no further questions, I would just ask that my additional 2 minutes be added to my rebuttal time.
Well, that we don't do, but you will have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please. Go right ahead.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Leah Hedman. I'm an assistant attorney general here on behalf of respondent, the Commissioner of Public Safety. I know it's a bit unusual, but I'd like to start with your questions rather than give you the practice speech I've worked on in several mirrors in my house and on the car on the way over.
Well, then you've already proven yourself an able oral advocate.
I don't know about that. But I think the key piece what we are coming back to over and over is that counsel for appellant thinks that there's no one to provide that nexus to say when Ms. Toll, she admits driving into the ditch, that she drove into the ditch or snowbank. She admits that she had a six-pack of beer, which is a substantial amount of alcoholic beverage, and that she's got slurred speech. She's got a blank stare. The officers are trying to get her attention at the door with using their flashlight, getting very little effect to her. All of her admissions, that material face-to-face contact with her provided really the basis for probable cause here. So the 911 call we'll happily talk about, of course, but really I think even if that is completely set aside, you have probable cause to support the warrant. And yes, I think, Your Honors, in your questions, you hit right on it. The purpose of the warrant was to, in fact, seize her to get additional answers from her, to find out additional evidence from her, and to offer those questions, ask her the pivotal things. But she prevented that from happening. First, normally—
Ms. Edmund, when you say that she prevented it, my understanding from the record is it was shortly after she went to sit down, they were able to force entry in, and they arrested her.
Right.
Did they make any attempt, does the record show any attempt, to continue with a DUI investigation at that stage?
I think the whole thing was a DWI investigation when they started to put things together. Here you have a one-vehicle accident. Somebody leaves the scene. They were saying that could be indicative of impairment. But in the transcript, the deputies are really measured. They say it could be for a number of reasons. Is impairment one of them? Yes. But that's part of their thought process. Then it's an easy snowmobile ride to her house. They see that she is the registered owner of the truck that's in there. There's a pill bottle that's related to her ex-husband, same last name, and they go to her residence. They talk with her through that door, and then they eventually are able to see the indicia that she's displaying, as well as her great admissions. I drove into the ditch. I drank a six-pack of beer. She's very emotional. She initially stares with a blank stare. She's in her living room. They can see them. They're flashing the flashlights, again, getting no real response. Then they get the warrant because she will not open the door to them.
To speed forward, though, isn't it true they were not arresting her for driving while impaired, and nor
right.
did the judge find that?
Right.
So my first question, though, related to a point you made, what does the record show an attempt once they entered to complete a DUI investigation?
Your Honor, I'd like to go back. When I said right, it's sort of a common thing, I think, for people to agree, but I think she was arrested for DWI. They said that she would have ability, or that the deputies would be able to go into her residence at the time because she was obstructing legal process, because even after they announced the warrant, she went back, she wouldn't open the door, she sat in her chair, and she cranked up the radio or the music.
Just clarify, though, the reason they went to get the search warrant is they agreed they did not have a basis yet for an arrest warrant for driving while impaired.
So we're clear that's what the deputies testified to. I think they had probable cause there. They didn't feel like they could go into the house, and that's why the warrant was necessary here to go into the house and seize her, because she would not gain them entry. That was why, the purpose of that. But the probable cause, they have a one-vehicle accident. They have someone who's left the scene. She is displaying slurred speech. She has a blank look on her face. She is being uncooperative and emotional as they talk with her. She's admitted, I have drank a six-pack of beer. She admits that she drove her car in the ditch.
So did
there's
you,
ample
did you,
probable cause, even without the 911.
Did the commissioner argue that to the judge? I'm curious, again, everything's DUI written all over it until you see the judge's order that it was an arrest for an obstructing legal process. So the judge neither gave an opinion on whether there was probable cause for an arrest for driving while impaired, but instead for obstructing. Did the commissioner argue to the court following the evidence that indeed, despite our officer's testimony, there was a basis for arrest for driving while impaired at the moment she refused entry and they had to go get a search warrant?
I think that I don't remember that in the transcript at all. I think that was the district court that said that, Your Honor, and said that because she was not allowing them entry again and she sat and defiantly turned up the radio, that was evidence of obstructing legal process, which would allow them lawfully
but
to enter the home.
But what I'm wondering is, did the commissioner, though, argue that there was also, in a separate, I understand that, did the commissioner argue there was a basis for arrest for driving while impaired?
I don't know that that was that they were really talking about the warrant, whether or not there's probable cause for the warrant. But I think that to answer your question, yes, in both instances. For the warrant, it's backed by ample probable cause. On page 10 of the court's brief, as well as our brief, we talk about the seven things. The judge lists eight total, but he includes the 911 caller information, which was unfortunately not really relayed accurately, completely by the dispatcher. And so that's where sort of things got muddled. But was there, in fact, a probable cause? Absolutely. And it's those seven things.
Can I just interrupt then? I had asked Mr. Whipple about this. The court made a finding. Here the record is clear that Deputy Novotny applied for the search warrant with an intention to seize petitioner, not to arrest her. So would that be the equivalent as a matter of law, the court at least concluded the record does not support an arrest for driving while impaired at that point?
I don't know if we can make that necessarily, but I think the seizure, the fact that that was their intention, is everything you have in the record, and there's absolutely nothing to say they did anything other than their intention was to seize her. And with regard to...
I'm referring to arrest her.
Yeah, so I think because the arrest happened... Oh, sorry.
Or did you stop at the seizure, but said not to arrest her. That was their intention. And then that's what factually the court then found in the record an obstructing legal process.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I come from a big family, and I'm nervous, so I don't want to talk over the court, and I publicly apologize. But I think that there was ample probable cause to arrest her, and I think the district court's order in upholding not just the search warrant, which was really the issue before him and the implied consent hearing, but also the arrest that occurred afterwards, because it was simultaneous. The officers get entry into, after she's sort of defiantly sitting, you know, cranking up the music, they gain entry to the home, and they smell the odor of alcohol. She continues to be uncooperative, which is also indicative sometimes of people who are impaired by drugs or alcohol. And then that coupled with everything else that they had seen and all of her omissions to them, which, you know, in addition to the one vehicle accident where she's the registered owner of the vehicle, that's why I say those seven things provide more than ample probable cause, not just for the warrant, but probable cause for this arrest. They have ample probable cause. And the judge himself in the district court's order cites State v. Lee, and that would be provide this court with support. But because we know sort of the classic indicia here, slurred speech, you know, is one of those, as well as her admissions to drinking a six-pack. She admitted her license was revoked. She admitted to driving the truck into the ditch. She would only speak with them through a glass door and would not open the door to them. She left the scene of a one-vehicle accident. The truck is in the ditch, and she's the registered owner. I would point you to ADD 2 at pages 1 to 2 and transcript page 34. But that's why there is so much probable cause, not just to submit the warrant or to support this warrant, but also for the actual arrest. Both factors apply in both cases. So I think that one of the key points that counsel made was, you know, the key point is when the deputies knew and when they knew it. It's clear from both deputies that they were provided similar information from the dispatch, and they used that dispatch information and relied upon it. They did not know anything about the 911 caller or the problems with a potential 911 caller's information until the next day. So there is no evidence here of anything but an innocent or negligent mistake. And under Causey, we know that the innocent or negligent mistakes and the affidavits are not sufficient to invalidate a warrant. And that's even if the misrepresentation were to be material. And here it's not. And we know it's not because the test for materiality under the law is that you pull that out and look to see if you still have ample probable cause. And again, those seven items that the court mentions in its order provide ample probable cause even when the 911 information is removed.
Ms. Hedman?
Yes.
Jumping then again to what the judge's basis, the obstructing legal process, was there anything, the case law seems to focus either on physical interference or uses the phrase verbal interference that rises to the level of a physical interference. And my question is, other than ignoring the officers and therefore not unlocking the sliding door, I'm assuming, and sitting down, was there anything in the record that shows that she verbally and or physically interfered with their desire to arrest her, which is apparently what they did shortly after entering?
I think the key there is that turning up the music, that she knew they were there. They had announced the warrant, and she, again, was refusing them to have entry. They had gone through to include a magistrate to get probable cause to bring forth the warrant, and they were asking her to, you know, open the door to talk with them. And I think that was clearly the intention. They wanted to seize her person, yes, but it was to further their investigation, as two members of the panel have indicated. I think that's exactly right. Had she been cooperative, I think it would have been a circumstance where they were able to ask her questions and to ascertain. You know, based on sort of the facts, slurred speech, leaving the scene, it's hard to know if she had a medical condition. Sometimes things can mirror. And getting a warrant here for her seizure to better understand and better investigate was appropriate, as the district court found. With regard to the obstruction of legal process, that's at the very end of the court's memorandum on page 12, and it talks about that the deputies had a lawful basis to force entry into her house, not to mention the evidence of alcohol concentration may dissipate rapidly. That's, again, why you would want to seize and provide immediate action. And one of them is true, because they don't know how long she has been drinking or how long the driving was. They need her to provide those answers. She is the one who knows, and they need to seize her in order to get her to respond to the questions, because she now is ignoring their warrant, ignoring their knocking, sitting down and cranking up the music in defiance. So that's why they say, following the entry, the deputies may then lawfully arrest petitioner given the obstruction of legal process. That was the judge's final word. He doesn't talk about arresting for DWI at that point, but I think their record and the facts are so overwhelming in support that there would be probable cause for that. I think this case law is in our favor. I'll try to wrap it up. Your Honors, I think based upon the information here, there's simply no information that there was any evidence that the deputies made any intentional or reckless misrepresentation of facts in their warrant application, and they properly were going to seize her. All the information is that the intention was to seize and further investigate, and that because here the district court correctly found that the majority of the probable cause was due to her own admissions and face-to-face contact with these deputies, that Ms. Toll and her admissions about drinking and driving, that even if we set the 911 call entirely aside, which is what case law tells us to do, and then look to see if the balance has probable cause, here there's ample probable cause, both to support the warrant and, Your Honor, to support the arrest that ultimately happened here. Your Honors, I would thank you for your time. Should you have any more questions, I'd be happy to hold.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Hedman. Mr. Whipper, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just quickly going back to the findings in the district court file, I think it's important to note a couple of the cases that were cited by the judge. We've got Bolig versus the Commissioner of Public Safety, as well as Connor versus the Commissioner of Public Safety, which has to do with a lot of my argument that there's no nexus between this driving conduct. And it talks about these accident cases, right, where there's a single vehicle accident and the officers come upon it later. I think it's important to note that Connor, which is specifically cited here, states that, of course, they don't have to testify to an exact minute that this accident happened. We know that from the case law. However, they do have to provide some sort of nexus between the alcohol consumption and the driving conduct, and here we just don't have that. And that's kind of where I would center my entire argument, is that even if you took everything in, you still can't say that at the time of this accident that she was driving impaired. Nobody can say that, even given a breath test that was later taken in.
Well, I mean, you know, that goes to proof beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal trial. This was an IC where, as I understand, unless I'm wrong, it's been a while, it's preponderance of the evidence. Am I right?
It is. And my basically what I'm saying is that there was, if you take out, leave out that information that we have about the fact that this caller never saw her, didn't have any basis of knowledge as to when she was driving this car, there's no probable cause to get to the search warrant. The whole basis of the argument is often when one person in the sheriff's department or police department gets some information, that we pool that knowledge and everybody on the police force knows that information. Well, that's the same should be the inverse then as well. If dispatch knew this information, then it should be inferred that everybody in this interaction knows that information. Dispatch knew that there was no basis to say that she was driving that car. Other than later on when she admitted that she drove the car, we still don't know when. And that's a major problem for this case, regardless of whether it's in the criminal section or in this implied consent hearing.
Mr. Whipple, I'm a bit troubled with your comment about the search warrant. Again, I understand it's unique, but let's presume, for instance, instead of going in the ditch, they had this report that she's drunk. They follow her, and she's weaving, and they end up following her all the way into her driveway, and she walks into the house, and everything else is the same. So there would be a standard DUI that they observed with both the call and the observation, so they have an articulable suspicion enough to expand the seizure, DUI, into a DUI field sobriety testing and so forth. But she refuses to let him in. Would that not form a basis? The only alternative, reasonable alternative, is to obtain a search warrant so we can enter the home to seize her for DUI purposes.
That could be one avenue. If they were following her, we could call that a hot pursuit case, and they could enter the house anyway.
So that's what I wanted to ask you. Your point being is search warrant generally may be a viable. Your point being is simply you don't believe there was sufficient articulable suspicion of driving while impaired to even seize her for further DUI testing.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whipper. Thank you, Ms. Hedman. The matter is submitted.